So we already talked about slide 12, which was demonstrating that there is a molecular signal that's in charge of the cell cycle, in charge of controlling the cell cycle. And in slide 13, we can kind of see this in cartoon form, kind of like a light timer representing the cell cycle overall. And these red flaps are so-called checkpoints. Now, checkpoints are not real structures like you see here, the things that actually make the light timer go on or off. Checkpoints in a cell cycle are really just sets of conditions. So things have to be just right in order for the cell to make it past that checkpoint and go on to the next phase, whatever that is. And so there's a particularly important checkpoint called the G1 checkpoint that you see here. That's fundamentally important because, remember, I said that G1 is, you can really consider that to be most of the lifetime of that cell being that type of cell. Right? When it goes from G1 to S, then that's when it's, in effect, making the decision, I've done my job as a single cell, now I need to start getting ready to make two cells out of myself. Because S and G2 and M are all about preparing and then going through with cell division. So when that G1 checkpoint happens depends drastically widely, depending on what type of cell it is, what type of organism it is, and when in the lifetime it is. Like I said, these checkpoints are really just sets of conditions. So a cell is just going to stay in whatever phase it's in until the conditions that checkpoint represents are met, and then it will be allowed to go. But it's chemical signals that actually make up those sets of conditions. Whether chemical signals are present and allowed to act as signals is what checkpoints really are in reality. So in 14, we see the G1 checkpoint getting a green light here. If the conditions are met at a molecular level, then a cell will proceed from G1 to S. And, for instance, this happens pretty quickly in a cell like a skin cell, for instance, because you're continuously making those. Since you're continuously losing a lot of them, you have to make just as many as you're losing on average, otherwise your skin thickness is going to either increase or decrease. It stays the same throughout your lifetime because you're making as many as you're losing. So they're busy dividing, meaning they don't have very long life cell cycle. But other cells in your same body, like a neuron, can be stuck in G1 the whole lifetime of you, not just the lifetime of the cell. That cell will live as long as you do, unless it dies. If it gets a red light, basically for the entire lifetime of the multicellular organism, meaning it can't progress on to the S phase, then we really rename that the G0 phase. It's just a word game. It's still the G1 phase, but G0 is what we use to represent a cell that is indefinitely stuck in G1 because it's never going to get that green light at the G1 checkpoint. So then let's look at what the signals, some important signals are. Now, we don't have all of this figured out. We're still learning about the signaling process and still discovering new signals. But a really important signal system is represented in, or is illustrated in slide 15. Involving two important materials, two important chemicals called cyclin and CDK. All right, now, cyclin is the name of a protein. It is a protein, though, that is acting as a signal. All right? CDK is short for cyclin dependent kinase. It's one of many different kinases that operate in your body. So just the word kinase by itself is a pretty general term. There are all kinds of different kinases. But a kinase as a category, well, obviously it's an enzyme, right? You know it's an enzyme because it ends in ASE. But a kinase, A kinase, I have one in my purse. A kinase is an enzyme category that does the job of phosphorylating something else. All kinases operate by phosphorylating, which means to stick a phosphate group onto something else, right? And when we were talking about functional groups in that chapter originally, remember I said that that is a major way to control other molecules. You can turn them on or off by either phosphorylating or dephosphorylating them, remember? That's in general true, and more specifically, that one example, specific example of that is activating or inactivating other enzymes. So a kinase is itself an enzyme because it can phosphorylate something else. But often the thing that it phosphorylates is another enzyme. So kinases control other enzymes often. And CDK is just one specific example of a kinase. Now it's called cyclin-dependent kinase because it does not operate as a kinase. In other words, it's not turned on as an enzyme unless cyclin comes along and binds to the kinase, CDK. All right, so CDK is an enzyme that's going to activate something else by phosphorylating it, but that CDK is itself not activated until cyclin comes along and binds to it, which is why it's called cyclin-dependent kinase. And then, you know, it can be even much more complicated than that, because when CDK acts as a kinase and phosphorylates something else to turn it on, whatever it turns on might be an enzyme that still turns on another one. So it can be quite complex. But the point here is that cyclin-dependent kinase is not doing anything other than being there. It's not functioning when it's by itself. It has to be activated by binding to cyclin. All right? Now, cyclin-dependent kinase, which is the enzyme, although inactive when it's by itself, is always present, which is why you see it in this bottom figure for the entire duration of the cell cycle. Cyclin, on the other hand, is not always present at high concentrations. It builds up. So if we look at the top, the graph, which is representing a few cell cycles, each time it repeats is a cell cycle, and you can see the subphase is labeled at the top. As it goes through G2, which is where we're starting, at the end of G2, the concentration of cyclin, which is a protein that's produced by the cell, builds up or increases. Cyclin builds up, so the concentration increases. Now, where does this cyclin come from? What did I just tell you it is? It's a protein, so it comes from where? No? It's not the job of the citric acid cycle to build proteins. Where? Can't hear you. Yeah, all proteins are made out of amino acids, but how does the protein get there? Well, it can be modified by the ER, but the point is cells. Cells make proteins all the time, right? It's just one of thousands of different proteins that are in a cell. Cells, when they need proteins, they make their own. That's what genes are, right? Genes are instructions for how to build protein. So there's a gene for cyclin among the thousands of other genes. And that gene for cyclin is only going to be transcribed when the gene is turned on, right? But if it is turned on, then it will be transcribed into messenger RNA, which will then be translated into the cyclin protein. And the more that happens, the more cyclin you will have in the cell. So that's why it's building up gradually. And when it gets to a high level, a high concentration, then there's enough of it for it to be pretty likely that that cyclin will come across a cyclin-dependent kinase, and the two will get together. All right. So just at low levels, at low concentrations of cyclin, there isn't enough cyclin to make it likely that it's going to bind to cyclin-dependent kinase, and therefore the cyclin-dependent kinase, which is there, just is kept inactive. When there's enough cyclin, it's likely that cyclin will bind to that cyclin-dependent kinase, and that turns on that kinase enzyme. And then that kinase enzyme phosphorylates other things to keep the signal going, the series of signals, I should say. And the series of signals, which we're not going to really get into the details of, is such that it will allow the cell to go from one phase of the cell cycle to the next. Right, as you see where it peaks out, it lets it go from the M phase. I mean, it causes the M phase. This is why, by the way, this lavender trace is MPF activity. It's labeled that. MPF just stands for mitogen promoting factor. A mitogen is something that causes mitosis. Don't worry about that word. I'm just saying something that promotes mitosis is going to be needed in order for cell division to occur, right? Because mitosis is part of cell division. So that's why it peaks out here. Mitogen promoting factor requires the kinase to be activated. And when cyclin is maxed out, then you have maximum effectiveness of the CDK, because the cyclin is needed to activate the CDK. And then that causes mitosis. But as soon as mitosis is over, notice the cyclin level, which was just high, drops very low quickly. And that's because, as you see in the cartoon on the bottom, cyclin is signaled in this new G1 of the next generation to be dismantled. So the cell needs to get rid of that cyclin, because a signal will operate if it's there. Well, you don't always want the signal to be operating, right? So to turn off a signal, you need to either change it somehow or destroy it. And in this case, it dismantles it down into amino acids, which are not wasted. They're amino acids that can then, in the next moment, be part of a different protein. They're just part of raw materials for building new proteins. But it's going to slowly build up in this next generation of cells until it causes mitosis in that. So that's part of the molecular signaling that I'm talking about. Now, in 16, we can see that in the upper left, in the laboratory, someone is messing around with some fibroblasts, which are connective tissue cells from humans. The specific example doesn't really matter so much. But if you isolate some of these cells from a human's body and then just grow them in nutrients to keep them alive, if you put those in, plate them out into some bit of glassware like you have here on the left, without what is called PDGF, then they will live, those cells, but they will not divide. They'll just stay as cells. Now, what is PDGF? That's another acronym. That this one stands for platelet-derived growth factor. The only reason it's named that is because it was discovered first in platelets. Platelets are not the only things that produce it. Platelets are made from blood cells. So these are not blood cells. But anyway, platelet-derived growth factor is a growth factor, which is a signal molecule. And a signal molecule, in the case of a growth factor, stimulates growth of tissue. But remember, growth of tissue means multiplication of cells, right? If a tissue is going to get bigger, it's not that cells are getting huge, it's that cells are becoming more numerous. Cells have to divide to produce new cells in order for a tissue to grow, and therefore the organism to grow. So, but anyway, this is a necessary signal in the case of these fibroblasts. So if you isolate these cells and give them the conditions so that they will not die, they won't die. But without the signal that's necessary to tell them they need to start dividing, they will just stay as single cells. On the other hand, if you plate them out on a medium that has PDGF, that chemical, in it, they just think they're in the body and receiving that as a hormone, and so they respond to that signal by undergoing cell division. Right? Proliferation simply means increase in numbers. So cells are dividing into two and doubling the cell population every however many hours. So that the necessity of that signal is important, but in slide 17 we can see that it's a little bit more going on as well. Here you have two concepts that are important called anchorage dependence and density dependent inhibition. Let me go through these individually. Anchorage dependence refers to the fact that certain cells not only have to have a certain chemical signal in order to tell them that it's time to divide, like the ones we just saw on the previous slide, but some cells also need to have a mechanical signal, meaning they need to be in contact with a surface and connected to it. That's what anchorage means, right? Stuck in place. So epithelia are like this, epithelial cells. Epithelia are tissues that cover surfaces, they line surfaces. And so they need to know that they are on a surface in order for them to get the go-ahead for them to be okay to divide and create two new cells. All right? In other words, if you just had these cells as a suspension in liquid, and then the liquid was the right stuff to keep them alive, they would stay alive, but they wouldn't divide because they aren't stuck to a surface. If you stick them to a surface, they think they are in place to be an epithelium, and then they will start dividing. The next thing, though, density-dependent inhibition, is something that keeps them from continuing to divide after it's time to stop. So an epithelium, as I said, needs to cover a surface, right? If you have a surface, for instance, if you suffer some sort of injury and tear an epithelium away, you lose some cells in that area. You no longer have an epithelium covering it. Then that's going to tell them they need to divide. Okay? When they divide and add new cells, those cells are gradually filling up the area that has been exposed. But when they finally fill that entire area, what happens is that all the cells start to run into each other. And they sense that they're right up against each other. That's why this is called density dependent. The density here means the number of cells in a given volume. It's like population density, only the population is the cells. When they are crowded together, that tells them as a signal, a different signal, we have divided enough now, we've filled the space, it's time to shut off and stay in G1. That's why it's called inhibition. It inhibits cell division rather than promoting it. And so all of these various kinds of signals tightly regulate the cell cycle unless something goes wrong. It's important for those signals to operate properly because it's really important for cells to go on to divide when they should, but just as importantly, not go on to divide when they should not. And when something goes wrong genetically, Because remember, genes are responsible for coding for proteins, and proteins are responsible for being the signals. So if there's a genetic defect that causes a change in the signaling process because either the proteins are not made or the proteins are defective because the genes coding for them are defective, then you lose the ability of some cells for them to realize that they should stop dividing. And so they keep dividing, causing a tumor. That's exactly what cancer is. Cancer is a genetic disorder. And by that I don't mean heritable. Genetic simply means involving the DNA, involving genes. So your genes are continuously being damaged by you living. Because, you know, sunlight's coming in, chemicals, all kinds of things, and just accidents happen over time. That's why the older you get, the more likely that your genes will be defective, because they've had longer time for things to go wrong with them. Over time, these defects will eventually start interfering with the ability of the cell to realize that it should shut off for the moment, dividing, and that's when cancers develop. This is why cancer is so much more common in the older you get. Okay, that's cancer by itself. Now in slide 18, we see cancer again, using breast cancer as an example, but any cancer could do this. When a tumor forms, that's because of a genetic defect in the cells of that area. Now, you started out as one zygote with a certain set of genes that you got from both of your parents. And obviously, when you're just one cell big, every cell in your body, which is just that one cell, has the same exact DNA. When cells divide into two, remember, they first have to go through that S phase to copy their DNA, and that is a pretty good copying process, impressively good. Very, very few mistakes are made. So we like to say that all of the cells of our body have exactly the same DNA, which would be true if there were never any mistake made and there were never any damage done to any of that DNA. But there are occasionally mistakes made and there are occasionally damages that occur. So by the time you've lived decades, the cells in your body are almost genetically identical, but they are not genetically identical, because skin cells, for instance, are more likely to have defective DNA than cells deeper in your body, because they're continuously being bombarded by ultraviolet radiation. Sunlight causes skin cancer because it hits the DNA and changes it. And once that change occurs, if it's in a gene that codes for one of these proteins that are involved in controlling the cell cycle, then that's when cancer occurs. But it can happen in anything other than skin cells as well. Anyway, cancer is localized. It's caused only in the cells that actually have lost that normal ability to realize they should stop dividing. That's not all of your cells. And so this is why cancers that are caught early can be addressed, because you just need to kill those affected cells. And the cells around them are still normal, and that'll be okay. The longer a tumor goes unaddressed, though, the bigger it gets, because, you know, it starts with one defective cell. It doesn't know it shouldn't stop dividing. So it turns into two cells. But when it turns into two cells more or less normally, meaning just like any cell, it's first going to make an exact copy of its DNA to give to each of the two cells it becomes. Well, in this case, though, it's defective DNA, which is why it's a cancerous cell. So one cancerous cell becomes two cancerous cells because an exact copy is made. And then they don't realize that they shouldn't stay in G1, so they quickly become four cancerous cells. And that's why it gets out of control. Tumors grow quickly. If they're localized to a certain organ, they can affect the function of that organ, but you still might be able to get that tumor out or kill the cells making up that tumor. When it really gets bad, though, health-wise, is when certain cells of that growing tumor leave the population and travel through blood or lymph to some other part of the body, and then take up residence in a new organ and start growing copies of themselves there. That's called metastasis. When cancer metastasizes, that's when it becomes life-threatening, which is why early detection is so important. All right, that's the chapter.